Next slide, please. So one of the things that people always are wondering about is what is required to get accepted to these programs when someone wants to go to treatment. So like as I mentioned just previously, the Indian Health Service Program Network, it consisted of those programs, Friendship House, Tribal Consortium, Tule River, and Three River Lodge. So if a person wants to go, if you have somebody that you want to figure out, like, how do I get them to treatment, just make a call to Kamau Behavioral Health. It's the 530-625-4261 and extension 0450. Request an appointment. We consider that a self-referral, so information will be taken. Generally, it's your phone number, questions about whether or not you have insurance, and then what if there's any limitations that we have to consider, any disabilities or limitations. Once that call's made, we'll schedule an appointment for an intake or assessment. Generally, these are about 90 minutes. At that appointment, we'll collect a California ID, tribal ID, and Social Security card. And what we found in providing these services, many times people that are in, struggling with the disease of addiction, they don't have these cards and, the tribal IDs and such. So we do provide transportation. However, that always pushes back, the time that it takes to get to treatment. So that's something we're always, really like up front, we want to know if those things are available. And if not, we start working on that immediately to get those things gathered. And then, of course, there's a phone interview with these detox facilities and or residential programs to get the applications and processes started, and then a medical visit, which consists of a physical and TB test, because most of these facilities require that you have to have, a TB clearance. If you don't, then they want x-rays, so it's a process that we work with. For local treatment programs in Eureka, we have Waterfront Recovery, Humboldt Recovery, Skyway House in Chico, and then Empire Recovery in Redding. So for many of these programs, the process is the same. We still have an intake and assessment. We still check for insurance and the doctor's visit, and then the phone interview with the treatment program. Next slide, please. One of our new grants that we received is through the Crisis Care Mobile Unit grant. What this grant is going to do is it's going to provide Kamau Medical Center and Behavioral Health Department with a 40-foot mobile RV. That RV is going to be used for community outreach, and the outreach will primarily happen at the high school and elementary school. This vehicle at the current time is being constructed, and it will be able to provide medical, dental, and behavioral health visits. So it's being equipped to offer those three types of outreach, and they won't all be on the same day, but the vehicle will be able to do a well-child medical visit, dental visits, and then behavioral health intakes and or counseling sessions at the school, so the kids don't have to leave the campus. That crisis care mobile unit outreach is also, it's been for about the last 4 or 5 months, we've been, we have a outreach worker that came to us from Humboldt County. She has years of experience with providing outreach and building crisis response teams. So what this worker does for us is she goes to the Monday morning rounds at the clinic, and at those meetings, there are clients that are discussed are people that have either had overdoses, suicidal ideation or attempts, people that have left hospitals against medical advice. And so that's kind of where that worker gets a list to provide outreach to those clients that are passed on at that meeting. We look to continue offering the crisis care mobile unit outreach, but expanding and building upon that. And ultimately, what we want to come away with is a team that can provide a psych nurse, the clinician, and then a case manager that can go out and go and make crisis response calls. For alcohol and drug outreach, we recently, I talked about the coordinated tribal assistance solicitation by Department of Justice, the outreach position. We hired that less than 90 days ago. That will increase community education and school outreach, school education, tabling at events throughout the community. And then our tribal opioid response award that was just funded this year, in this fiscal year in October, also provides a new worker that we have to work with HR and fill that position. That's also going to be an outreach coordinator. So we're working on building an outreach department that can better do outreach visits to our local school and community. At this time, once we have that position filled, we'll have three outreach workers. And the Narcan training that was spoke about earlier, that is something that I know recently it was discussed, and I received a text from Joe about getting all of our offices equipped with Narcan training and having Narcan at each entity. So that's something that we will be doing here in the very short future, very near future. Next slide, please. For this last calendar year, the alcohol and drug visits were 1,598 visits, and that represented 185 clients. For mental health visits, it was 966 visits, and that represented 190 clients. For our mental health billing, for this past year, it was 219,360 billed and collected 175,261, adjusted 14,521. When it says adjusted, that refers to people who are either uninsured or underinsured, people who have tribal member insurance, and so that's adjusted out. And then unpaid at this time, just under 30,000. For our sober living residents, in the last year, we've provided services for 16 individuals, and that's probably about, at this time, it's been about three quarters males and a quarter females. For outreach visits, in this, since we've had the outreach worker, 2,078 outreach visits. Next slide, please. For 2022, we offered a sobriety camp at Tishkang. We invited many of the programs that we refer our clients to. This year, we're going to offer that camp again at the Tishkang campground. We'll be inviting the Friendship House, many of the programs in the IHS network, as well as HRC has been a real big partner in the last three sobriety camps. We offered the Families in Recovery through the Friendship House, and that's a kind of an alumni aftercare event where the Friendship House staff comes and they continue to collaborate with people who have graduated from their program in our community and do sobriety countdowns for those folks in the community, also recruiting more people. Sovereign Days, we helped with facilitating the stick tournament for our youth. And then up in the art therapy is something that's offered through our Native Connections program. Question, Persuade, and Refer is an entry-level suicide intervention skills training that's offered through Native Connections. And then the mobile medical outreach, like I said, we're hoping that April, the vehicle, it could be April or May, but we're hoping that our mobile RV is completed by that time. And then as Joe said earlier, the Humboldt County Mental Health Collaborative with the Sheriff's Office and Humboldt County Department of Health and Human Services Collaborative. With closing, and I know I'll stick around for questions after, but in closing, I want to point out a couple of our gaps, and I know I will be working with our council and tribal leaders to try and get this addressed. But one of the things that we've seen with regards to mental health and our gaps is when we identify people that have co-occurring, so they have a mental health disorder happening and substance abuse, when we go to try and get that person stabilized and refer them to treatment, what we're finding is that within our Indian Health Service Network, they're being denied because their mental health need is too high. And when they're denied, I've gone to Indian Health Service and I say, what do we do when these people get denied these services? And what we're told is that then we turn back to the county that we reside in, and then we look to the county to get these people served. So I turn to the county in this instance, and then what I find there is that they're not severe enough to receive services at the county level. So what we have is somebody that's too severe for the Indian Health Service, not severe enough for the county, so then they just sit there. And many times you see this when you drive through our community. You see the people along the side of the road. You see the people that, you know, to the average person, it looks like we have, you know, people that definitely need services. And so when the main vehicle for that service is for that person to receive a 5150, which is they're held against their freedom, they're held against under the county for stabilization. And the first thing that happens when they get out there many times is if they have any substance in their bloodstream, then it's just written off as, well, this person has a drug problem, they don't have a mental health problem. And so they're released. And so there we are again with, you know, the person released back to the community. So I feel that the solution here is like to get our tribal leaders together, not just the Hoopa tribe, but the Kudup tribe, the Yurok tribe, Bear River tribe, and to go and advocate and lobby to Indian Health Service, because basically what they're saying is that our people only have drug and alcohol problems and they don't have mental health problems due to trauma, intergenerational, you know, genocide, all these things. So we need to advocate together and have Indian Health Service find, you know, provide the solution, because at this time there is no mental health treatment that's provided for by Indian Health Service. And so with that, that's my presentation. Like I said, I'll be here afterwards as well.
I just want to say really quickly, Indian Health Service has their annual tribal consultation coming up in April. And, you know, I go, well, I work for Indian Health Service, but anyway, I've been going for several years. I hardly ever see the Hoopa Tribal Council there, somebody from the council. I've seen them come in to meet with Beverly Miller and then leave. Leonard, you and Mus, I saw you in Reno a few years ago, and I really was thankful that you attended the meetings. But we do have tribal consultation coming up, and I encourage Joe or Jill or somebody that's your liaison to come out. So just want to say that quickly.
Thank you.
In all my 71 years of being a tribal member, I served on one board. The tribal council put me on one board 1 year, and vice chairman at that time was Hostler, and he said, I want you to do three things. Get on that board. I'm coming off. But you get on the board. And I asked him, I said, what's the greatest need in the tribe as far as medical assistance? He said, we got a lot of money for alcohol. We got a lot of money for drug abuse, but we got nothing, nothing addressing mental illness. And that's the greatest need in Hoopa. Now, here's a guy that his whole career dedicated to Hoopa. And it's still there. That need is still here. You identified the problem in Humboldt County and Indian Country very well. You'd be commended for that. But I want the council to stand up and take an active role in bringing CARES Court to Humboldt County. It's an act that was signed by the governor back about, November or something of last year, CARES Court. And what that about is, your programs are voluntary by the recipient. He has to voluntarily want to go in there. You can't order him to go in there, do nothing for treatment. In CARES Court, you can. We need to bring CARES Court to Humboldt County, and we need to bring it to our own tribal court. Because in there, a person can go there, and you can identify them, and a court can mandate that they go to treatment. And if they don't, they can take them into custody and make them take treatment up for 2 years. Find that act, support it, bring it to Hoopa, bring it to Indian Country. Now, I'm expressing this because I've experienced that firsthand, and it's a living hell. Tears you apart when you can't take somebody, get them help. Do it for Indian Country, do it for your people. CARES Court. Call it up, look in your phone. Very explicit. I sent some information to Joe. Joe was able to read it. I asked Joe when he went down to meet for the governor, and he said, do one thing for me. Walk up behind Newsom, pat him on the back, and say, you did something good, and support that act. Bring it to Humboldt County.
Thank you. At this time, our medication-assisted treatment program, counselor Mr. Jack McNerney is going to provide an update for that. Thank you.
Hello, everybody. My name is Jack McNerney. I am the supervising counselor for the medication-assisted treatment program. I've been here since May of 2018. I'm trying to do a little update from that point. So establishing by Kamau Medical Center in Hoopa Valley Tribe and the Tribal Medicaid Assisted Treatment Program, this TMAP. And I got that term at a conference that I went to, and it was an all-Indian conference, and they went Tribal Medicaid Assisted Treatment. I was like, that makes sense to me. So I've been trying to get that in there, but when I say that, people are like, TMAP, what do you mean? It's MAT, so they understand MAT. They don't understand the tribal medication-assisted treatment component. I'm trying to get that out there. We supervise three in-house recovery groups a week and provide transportation to and from those meetings and 12-step meetings in the Hoopa Valley at the hotel Mondays and Fridays. And we also provide transportation to TAC conventions. Sometimes they're in Eureka, sometimes they're in Sacramento. Sometimes as far as Sacramento and Redding, and so we provide transportation to and from those events. We have on-site and outreach therapy with renowned psychologist John Israel, and he's doing conducting some of the groups at the MAT building, and he's really connecting with our clientele. He's making an impact. And so people have been coming, and it was very difficult to get people to re-engage back into the group format because of COVID. They weren't going to groups for quite a while. And so we're delivering stuff to them, and we're trying to get them to re-engage was a struggle. But we're getting back to that, and it's working out for us. And our building, the MAT building, is an old folks' home right next to Kamau. Stephen Stake was able to get that building for us, and we also share that building with Danielle and for the domestic violence building. And so It's going very well over there. It's a nice building. We also have basket-making classes, carving classes, and 2 days a week, we are offering massage therapy, and 1 day a week, we're offering acupuncture. It was a grant that Judy got, and so I don't know how long it's going to last, but right now, people are receiving that benefit. Our personnel, my MAT director is Eva Smith. Our program manager is Judith Serber. CADC2 supervising counselor is myself, Jack McNerney. Our CCAP RADT counselor is Jesse McCovey. Our CCAP RADT outreach coordinator is Jenna Marshall. Our mat nurse right now is open until filled. And our therapist is John Israel, 2 days a week. I just want to give you a little induction day in the life of a MAP patient. So a MAP patient is referred by self, loved one, doctor, behavioral health, probation, ICWA, county, etc. Patient is contacted by one of our staff. If we cannot reach patient by phone, we go to your house. Or we locate you downtown or we find you. Many know our program and have previously been enrolled. We explain the policy and procedure. Sign consent to proceed with treatment. Patient either shows up at appointment or in most cases we transport patient to the scheduled appointment. Patient is provided with a urine screen and blood draw to determine which treatment will be most beneficial. If appropriate, patient is seen by a nurse and is provided with a clinical opioid withdrawal scale. It's called a COWS. To determine the level of precipitated withdrawal, which will in turn decide when the medication-assisted treatment can be administered by Dr. Smith. The patient in withdrawal is prescribed and provided with a small dose of Suboxone, and then the withdrawal symptoms are relieved, and the patient is not sick, and can move forward with the counseling aspect and sign additional paperwork for consent, group counseling, individual treatment planning, and induction phase monitoring. That's a very important step right there. Because if you are given the medication before you're in full withdrawal, the medication will put you in precipitated withdrawal and you'll get sick. So that's why the medically assisted treatment part, the nurse and the doctor is involved in that crucial step right there. From May of 2018 to present, we have attempted induction, facilitated detox rehab for over 500 patients, many two or three times, and we currently have an active roster, inactive roster, and active roster of 110 patients that we go over weekly, just see where they're at. We currently have an active MAT roster of 51 clients in all different stages of recovery. 30 of them are working, two in sober living, looking for work. One is in detox, four is in residential treatment, three attend school, four stay-at-home parents, two are retired, two have mental health issues, and three are just working on the recovery as we speak. And the two mental health clients are not really receiving Suboxone, but they're in our program, and we just help them. So we meet clients where they're at. We promote harm reduction. We provide Narcan trainings and have distributed over 800 Narcan over the last year. One time we just sat up downtown and had barbecues and fed everybody and had Narcan trainings at the same time, provided $30 gift cards if you show up. And so a lot of people came, and we were happy about that. We get our clients job ready, which normally entails establishing identity through the DMV. And we don't give clients a paper to fill out in return. We take the clients to the DMV, to the Social Security office, or records department for a birth certificate. Whatever it is they need to get job ready, that's what we do. We have a computer station for clients to make resumes and job search. We help clients navigate the web and the government sites. Jesse McCovey alone, he's not here, I don't see him. I'll have him stand up, embarrass him and everything, but Jesse McCovey alone helped over 50 residents receive the stimulus check because they either could not navigate the government site or they didn't think it applied to them because they didn't work. They just didn't understand what was going on. And so he went out there and helped them and help them enroll and get their stimulus checks. We also have a contingency management component to our program to address the stimulant use population, which is kind of an incentive-based program. It's new, and we are struggling with implementation for that program. We received some grant funding for it. Judy signed us up, and the reward for a clean test is $5. The next clean test is $6.50, so it goes up $1.50. And we're having trouble getting people to buy into that concept. So I'm like, let's give them the money back, because that's not working. But you need a better, a more incentive. And they won't let me just give a person the incentive just for showing up, which is, I don't think is working for us. So we're working on that, and we're looking for other avenues and other ways to make that happen. We consider TMAT program a success. 30 working clients alone demonstrate what can be accomplished when you don't give up on your people. So thank you. Been here since 2018, and I appreciate you guys. Any questions?
Thank you, guys. I did want to say, you know, it wasn't that long ago I had a lady call me, and she's having a lot of issues, and, you know, I told her, well, you know, why don't you go to treatment, and that might help you out. And she said she was ready to go. I called Boyd. He was down there right away, and that afternoon she was meeting with Damon, and she left for treatment about a week later. You know, I hear things from time to time, but all the people I know, my family and stuff, people that want to go to treatment, they can go. I think that our program has done a good job if people are, you know, willing to jump through the hoops. I mean, like you said, you need a TB test, different things like that. But, you know, if you guys have loved ones, you know, and they're saying that they'd be willing to go, call these folks and set up an appointment. Set a time, you know, they'll respond. I've seen it. It's probably saves people's lives. But now we're just going to go ahead and open it up for any questions or comments that you all may have. I would ask that we limit our comments to 5 minutes long. If you, you know, once 5 minutes hits, you know, you can go back and wait your turn, but make sure that other people have the chance before you come back up. Lois, come on up, please. You can get Tanea, do you think you could bring the mic around for people that may need it? Yeah, just on the next one.
My name is Lois Risling. I'm a Hoopa tribal citizen. And I want to say that I'm giving this to the council as well as the membership about what is the motto of the day, a positive, respectful manner. But I do want to say that it's very positive for the Hoopa tribal members to be interactive with the council. That's a positive act, because it's been a long time and we just say, you can't talk to those people. For many councils, you can't talk to them. They don't listen, they don't do this. The fact that people will stand up and talk to you is a positive thing. They have enough respect for you, they have enough respect for the institution, the Constitution, and who we are as Indian people. No one's shouting. No one's talking over other people. They're following the agenda. Those are all positive things. We are doing what we are expected to do. So I just want to let you know that those are all positive acts, and that's what we're doing. Now, I'm going to talk about some things that I guess somebody could construe as not positive. And they're not gotcha items. They're really coming from a place of, I don't understand this. So in the budget that was passed by the council, all the council members voted for it, there was a line item in one of the department's budget for ARPA funds. It was about $3 million, and it was stuck into the planning department's budget. But the planning department can't spend that money. They cannot do projects on it. So that leads me, as a tribal person, saying, why was that stuck in there when the department can't use it? Was the council hiding that money from the membership to show that the ARPA funds were fully spent when there's $3 million still there? That reminds me of school district budgets. I used to sit on a school district, and they would always put in, I'm buying a bus, I'm buying two buses, so that the unions would think they didn't have any money. And they, guess what? They never bought a bus, but it was a way to hide money. If that was the intent of the council, if the council's intent was to hide that money, that's unethical. And we can't trust you. We can't trust you, because what else are you hiding from us? What else are you using? My understanding, that $3 million still hanging out there is going to be taken away from the planning department. That puts the planning department in a very awkward position, because people like me look at the budget and go, you got $3 million, what are you doing? And they go, well, we can't spend that, we can't do anything. That doesn't look good. And I have to ask the question, are there other funds that have been doing this? So intent is important here, and ethics are important. And it is disappointing to see that happen. And every one of you voted to approve the budget, so I have to assume every one of you approved that. So that's one of my questions. Why was it there, and who were you hiding it from? The other thing is, in Patricia's comments, she said, please let us know if there are one of these entities that you, tribe, don't want to pay for anymore, or you think should go away. I want to say the one I'm going to bring up, I brought up at the last meeting, and I brought up it the year before, and that's HFI. We have two logging trucks. I don't know if they ever got certified to, because we bought them out of Oregon, if they ever got certified to travel around the state of California. Their deficit is large. For the last 2 years, it's been over $300,000 per year, plus dollars per year. We're throwing money at HFI. Individual council members have said, we're going to invest this money, and HFI includes the mill. We're throwing money at that. It's bleeding funding. So I want to put on the record again, because Patricia said if there's a particular entity you don't think should be funded, HFI needs to be done away with. And we need to find other ways to log our timber. I'm not saying do away with the timber business. I'm saying that entity, because we're $600,000 behind, and we have plans to throw money at it. So, the other part of that question is, when will the membership see the business plans? Because business plans give recommendations, and sometimes the business plan says, this business won't work. So if you're a haircutting business and you have to cut 500 heads of hair a week, but you only have 200 people in the community, there's no way that business is going to work. We need to see that. So those are my observation. And the last things I want to say is positivity and respectfulness is a two-way street. It needs to come from the council. The agenda, as it was written up and presented, is not positive, nor is it respectful. It's not positive and respectful to the meeting itself, and it's not positive and respectful to the membership. There is no call to order.
There's no agenda approval. There's no opportunity for the attendees at the meeting, the membership, to change or add to the agenda. This is our meeting, but the way this agenda is written and presented, it's clear it's the council's agenda and the council's meeting. And that is not the intent of what these general meetings are about. That, to me, is not positive nor respectful. Thank you for your time.
You said, Wyle Marshall, Joe, you said, Chairman Mark Carendares, you said we have $4 million in tribal trust. Is that separate from general fund?
It is separate from the general fund. So according to our CFO, it's the amount is $4,491,794.40. I think Gary mentioned it earlier. Most of that comes from the stumpage that the tribe collects, and that's where your elder pay comes from.
I appreciate that elder pay now that I get it. I think it's, but Patricia said we're broke. We don't have any money. So I said, wait a minute, I got a $100 million budget. And I got $4 million in the tribal trust, so why are we broke? And then I went and said, well, if you divide a $100 million budget by 12 months, your cash outlay, just general principles, about over $8.3 million a month. So I understand the cash flow problem. I don't know how you can do that if you're waiting for reimbursements. So I guess my question to the council, and I'm not going to expect an answer off the top of your head, but how do you, seems like you have Patricia refers to it all the time, cash flow problem, monthly, difficult, where the government's huge. That needs to be addressed somehow, and I'm not ready to give... I don't have a clue how you guys do it. But he said, what programs do you want to get rid of? I never understood the purpose of your COO. Why would pay a man for 4 days a week to spend over $200,000 for a $200,000 salary just so he could recommend that you hire a consultant for another six figures to come up with a Section 17 corporation? I comment on what a corporation is and what it needs to be. I taught the class for College of the Redwoods. There's all kinds of duties and responsibilities of a corporation board under corporation law. And I hesitate to support that because if you don't set it up as an independent entity that's not politicized or run by this council, it's just a committee that can't be held accountable for its losses after it's transferred. So again, I say I support separating those businesses because that a corporation board, as I said before, has one duty. It's not to the government. The one duty is to produce profit for its shareholders. And that is where we got to get back to, because this government sucks up everything that is tribal to supplement its own budget. So we're not moving forward with that proposal in terms of producing revenues for the membership. And I think that's where the focus needs to come back to. We just had a conversation about mental health. Everybody that's working in mental health is a recovering addict and a recovering drug abuser. And I say this, the difference between them and the people they're treating is they have a job. They have an income. And I don't think you spend enough time talking about understanding economics. and creating some type of independent economy that isn't just, isn't socialist in structure. And so there's no, we have to, look, this is a beautiful place. And yet if you drive around Hoopa, you see the abject poverty on every back road where there's garbage and junk cars and houses that are caving in. And we downtown, there isn't a business there anymore. I don't know how we're going to bring, get anybody to come up and eat in a restaurant here when the town has nothing, no reason for anybody to come here. And our people are so poor that they're not going to support that restaurant either. So when you, I don't know that that's a, there needs to be a plan, that's true, but for downtown, but there's, yeah, there's nothing there. And I don't know of anybody that's got the kind of money. And when you talk about investment, you really need to talk about funding the operation for at least a year, because nobody's going to make, you're not going to start out making money. I caution you about that. Don't throw money at an idea until you do have a business plan that at least tells you on paper that it should work.
To your point, Lyle, you know, a lot of our people that work in mental health, they are recovering, but you know, they're a light of hope for those people that are in recovery to say, hey, man, if they can do it, why can't I? You know, I think we should applaud those people. I don't think we should be bashing them.
That's not my point.
I mean, with regards to the economy, I mean, we all have our role to play in this, right? I mean, everybody has a chance to make the change. We've had opportunities over the years. We've all had various opportunities and different jobs that we've had. I mean, it's on all of us. I mean, we wanna turn it around. You know, if you're not a part of the solution, you're part of the problem.
I appreciate your answer.
My name is Steve Baldy, Hoopa Tribal member. First of all, I want to congratulate the council with this meeting. It wasn't quite organized, I don't think appropriately, but it did happen. I'm trying to be positive because people have said in the past that when you bring up issues that you're being negative. And all that I'm trying to do is bring out the facts of what you have reported to us, both in your presentations and in the documents that you've handed out. I think it's great that the council recognizes finally that we do have a deficit, because in the past, if you were to ask individual council members about the deficit, they would look at you and sort of say it doesn't exist. Or if they didn't say that, they would say, we don't know how much it is, so it could be a little bit of money, could be a lot of money. But at least today, we have our fiscal officer reporting to us, finally, that she says it's around $5 million. However, she also said that that deficit is a problem for the tribe, that we are in financial difficulty, and that we have to do something about it. I'm glad that we're talking about it today. I have a question that I think that the council should look into. What is the deficit made up of? There have been all kinds of discussions about that it's this business, that business, it's this loss, it's that loss. But we never have anything that's in writing from the tribe, from the government, from the council, that says this is what our deficit is made up of. The tribe has paid for consultants to do financial analysis of the tribe in the past. And those consultants have said, in an indirect way, what the deficit was made up of partially. But as a tribe, we haven't had meetings or a series of meetings to say, this is how we're going to address that deficit in the future, now and in the future. There was this money that was taken from this program. As a tribe, we've adopted measures that says that will never happen again. We haven't done that. We haven't said this is how we're going to correct anything. All of a sudden, today, when the deficit was reported at a higher amount, some people reported it at 12 million, some people reported it at 16 million. Today, we're told that it's 5 million. How did we get there? I hope, you know, that in the meetings that we as a membership are not privy to, we're not privy to what you guys talk about in executive session. And I know that you talk about a lot of things in executive session. I don't know if you talked about how we got from a high amount of the deficit down to a $5 million deficit. I don't know that. I think that the membership are entitled to know, again, what the deficit is made up of and how we're fixing it. That has not been discussed. It's just assumed that somehow magically it gets reduced. I want to congratulate the businesses that we have that are making money. TISMIL is making money. However, in the past, the council has taken funds from TISMIL. They've taken as high as $1.1 million. What was that money for? Was that the money that was used to reduce the deficit? Partially? I don't know. You have reported to us in documents that you have taken $1.1 million, at least for 2 to 3 years. Prior to that, it was $500,000. Prior to that, it was $200,000. Now, that goes against tribal ordinances. It goes against our per capita ordinance. I want to congratulate the Roads Department. The Roads Department in the past has always shown a loss. But I asked the prior Roads Department personnel, why are you showing a loss? They said, well, the tribe, the government, makes us do special projects and they don't pay us for it. We have to assume the cost. That means we do a loss. So I'm assuming that that's not being done now because our Roads Department is showing a profit. I have a little bit of a question about in terms of materials that they use in terms of gravel. Is that money recognized as a revenue to the tribe? Because it's a natural resource, just like timber. I want to congratulate the grocery store. The grocery store, with the documents that you've given us, shows that it has a profit. Now, I have a question about, in terms of the grocery store expenses, I know that the tribe rehabbed that whole facility. I think that it spent its own money, and I think that it spent some loan funds. And I can't see in the grocery store expenses whether they are paying the loan for that, or is it paid off, or is the tribe still paying for that? Whatever the answer is, it should be reflected in our financial statement. That's a more accurate position of the grocery store. Again, on the casino, you know, I sat on the casino board a long time ago, and I looked at casino records in the past. And at one time, the casino, before all the competition, it made in its high $1.5 million. That was way back when. When I was on the board, I understood that the council at that time was taking funds from the casino, just like it would take the $1.1 million from TISMIL from profits. Whatever the profits that the casino was making, they were taking a certain amount of money. We didn't get an accurate figure from the government at that time, when I was on the board, of how much money that the tribe was taking. Now, the tribe has the right to do that. However, you should report, it should be reported to the membership that you needed to tap into casino revenues in order to pay for some expenses. We should be told that. Same thing as when you take money from TISPA. We should be told that. In terms of HFI, you know, I support HFI, but I think it's time that we take a look as a tribe at all of our businesses. You know, it's almost to the time that, you know, you declare a state of emergency for the operations of those businesses that are continually making losses. Are those losses, and I assume, because I've been told by various council people, that we use general fund money to pay for those losses. Well, that general fund money belongs to the people. We have a right to have input on how that's spent, and we haven't had. I think it's time that you look at businesses like HFI and say, is there some way that we can make it work? Maybe there is, I don't know. I do know that in terms of this Section 17 corporation that was formed, we were told at meetings in the past, grants are bad. You guys depend on grants too much. You need to do this Section 17 corporation to get away from doing grants and do contracting to make money. Well, we found out recently that the tribe, you have this what's called the capacity building program through the Tribal Nations Gaming Fund. That's a grant. You're going to use $500,000 of grant money to provide seed funds for that corporation. I suppose that's your decision to make, but I still think the membership should have had some sort of input with that. That grant, by the way, can lead to, if you do it right, $1 to $5 million of economic development activity. If this $500,000 is used to strengthen the capacity of the tribe, I guess in this sense of the corporation, you're setting yourself up for $1 to $5 million in the future, and that could be starting sometime in the fall. That's something that I think the membership should have some input on. I also know that in coming up very soon, you will either apply for $400,000 twice, or you'll apply for one time $800,000 under what's called the Equal Distribution Grant under the Tribal Nations Gaming Fund. So there's three sources of funds added up, $1 to $5 million, $500,000, $800,000. How much money is that? That's all potentially available for economic development. You cannot use it for per capita. You can use it for infrastructure as long as it leads to economic development. So you have an opportunity there. But again, I think that the membership should be directly involved with that. Thank you for your time.
I just want to say that, you know, there's been a lot of talk about, you know, positivity versus negativity, or, you know, respect versus disrespect. And I would say that the vast majority of these comments here today, I think, have been very positive and respectful. I think that they're helpful. You know, you may not disagree, may not agree with every single thing, but it's been good. I appreciate it. A lot of great points there by Steve. Thank you, Steve. Anybody else?
Ms. Risley and then what's called says, are you guys hiding stuff from us? I think we should do away with executive meetings, because that way you don't hide nothing and everything's on table for the people to know. No, our logging trucks haven't been hauling any logs. They haven't been out doing anything. HFI is going farther in a hole. I've been up there volunteering time. Your CO is never out there doing anything like he is. Where's he at now to answer these questions to back him up? You know, and I don't think that's right. You know, let's keep on going. Just like Mr. Cogrove says, our neighborly tribes are taking over our river. You know, they're getting infrastructure up there, taking our money away from us, millions of dollars, where we should be able to be up there putting more jobs into our people's hands and giving them more jobs instead of down the river what we're going to do when our river's taken away from us. Klamath is going to take their dams down. Oregon's going to take away more water from those people. LA's going to lose water because of Colorado River. Where are the people going to get water in the south? They're going to take our river. What are we going to do? We're letting those guys take our river away from us now by taking millions of dollars out of us for the infrastructure up above Weaverville. HFI ain't making nothing. We moved equipment from one spot to another. Is it that you guys got no pride or dreams for our younger generations of our tribe? We need to make a stand as people to know what's going on. That's why I say we should do away with the agenda of the other meetings. That way everybody knows who's doing what and who's not getting this and who's voting against the people. Other than that, we're gonna never make forward. You know, we need to make our stand as people. We're losing money, like you said, $600,000 on logging trucks. The trailers weren't even brand new like they were supposed to have been on the trucks. That's like I said, we always got liaisons for all our different enterprises. We got 59 entities. Why ain't you guys rotating them for everybody to know what's going on in those entities instead of just having different liaisons for this or that or passing the buck on to this council representative? We vote you guys in to know what everything goes on in every one of those entities. But we don't have it. None of that kind of stuff. And that's like I said, we're losing. HFI's failing. You put the wrong people in control and all that kind of stuff. You make these points and you're taking money out of these other entities to pay for their mess ups when the people go without. We're making our people more poverty than what they are. And the people pay for everything in this valley. They pay for the high store, they pay for the garbage, the gas station, the water, everything. But yet we're not giving nothing back to the people. And these are the valuable points that we need to help instead of bringing our people down to a low depression part. Poverty is $400,000 and none of us ever even make that much money, you know. It's all about what everybody can do for themselves, but what are we going to do for the younger generations and the generations to come? Nobody has that question. We're supposed to have a 10-year agenda plan for every entity that progresses around here. We don't even have that infrastructure no more. It's all about making it from month to month to month, taking from this place, from that place, to put into this place, to keep that place going. You said we profited $21,000 in December for our wood. On the paper that he's talking about, we only made $300. You know, $300 from the mill. We didn't profit no $21,000. So where were we profiting?
In the month of December, that's when we started selling.
Yeah, but this is the paper. Well, that didn't come out on your piece of paper.
That's because we weren't selling to those guys in those previous months.
But that don't talk about the paper that you handed out to the people today.
There's progress. We went from making a loss in October and November to a $21,000 profit in December because we started getting more sales.
But now we're only made $300 to this point.
Yeah, that's better than losing money last year. I mean, we're making progress.
We're not even paying for the wages.
We all have kids growing up in our tribe, and you know, we all have big families that we care about. We're here working hard every single day, man.
If we're working hard, why aren't we progressing?
We are.
Where?
I feel like we've shown a lot. I just told you, look at the mill. We made $300 in 3 months. That's better than a loss.
$300
in 1 month. That's progress from losing money. I mean, you know, that's basic math.
We're not. That's not making math. We're losing. That's like I said. I went up to that logging outfit of yours, and I volunteered 3 days up there.
We're trying to hire we're advertising. We're going to hire a new manager for HFI. I mean, we need a good manager. I mean, that's what we're after right now.
Everybody that we hire, when we put them in the CO in house moves, they sit behind the desk and we go farther behind. I had to do a lot of those people's work that you guys paid bigger dollars than me to go out there and do the things that they were supposed to do, and I had to do it.